Hello, welcome to Skeptic Hangout, the place where we sit back, relax, and chit-chat about intriguing and sometimes controversial topics through the lens of skepticism. We are Josh and Laura, and we have with us today guest host Puck, Twitch streamer extraordinaire and sometimes ACA host. We are going to be discussing free will, so grab your English tea or whatever caffeinated beverage you choose. And join us as we discuss whether we are, in fact, in charge of one's own actions. Or maybe we won't. This is Skeptic Hangout, Free Will. So free will, I guess we could probably start off by maybe defining what we think free will actually is.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to be most interested, because it would depend so much on what you actually mean by that. Do we mean that we can do anything we wanted to do, or does it mean that we are unfettered in our thoughts? I don't know that. So I guess let's start with a working definition that we can play off of.
I always thought free will was if they had reset everything, like the entire universe, back to square one, could you things have gone any differently than they did? And I would say, no fucking way. If you reset it exactly how it was, everything's going to play through exactly how it was. Like, people can point to the Jeff Goldblum scene in Jurassic Park where he drops the water on his knuckles, and they're like, he dropped in the same spot, but it went in different directions. And they can use that as like the idea for chaos and going, and like, there is free will, but they're forgetting that there's all those little tiny things that you're not seeing that are still playing into it. So there still was change. It wasn't exactly right into the beginning of how the universe started. So if you're doing everything down to the atom, starting exactly how it started this universe, I don't see how there's any way things could have ever played out differently. There's an illusion that we have choice, that we have free will, but I don't think there's any actual free will. Like, everything I've done is influenced by what's happened in the past, down to like me probably saying this intro is influenced by me being quieter when I was younger and then getting louder as I started, and just being able to ramble on far further than I probably should be allowed to, even when my speech starts to stutter. That's me going against my free will and continuing to go on with this speech.
So are you saying you don't have the free will to stop speaking whenever you want to, because it's just so impulsive?
Well, I feel like I'm shutting up when I want to, but I don't think I have a choice.
Yeah. So I think there's a very, very layman's definition of free will, which is just like the ability to make a choice. But I think that that's really, really oversimplified when you think about it, because we don't even necessarily choose the choices we're making. They come to us, right? And so that's where I think free will gets tricky. I think, what is his name? Sam Harris said it really well. He was like, think of a movie, just any movie, right? Whatever movie pops into your head, you didn't choose that movie to pop into your head, right? It just did on its own. And whatever synapses or whatever, like, released that movie or whatever for it to be called to your conscious mind, it was a process that's outside of your conscious control. Right.
Well, like, before we started this conversation, we were talking about how the signs we were making with our fingers looked like dinos fucking, and that put Jurassic Park into my mind. So I had the Jeff Goldblum example right off the top of my head.
That
wasn't something that I chose to have in my mind. That was something that was implanted by Laura, who made dinosaur looking finger signs.
So for the audience's benefit, Puck can do this really cool thing with his fingers where he makes a heart like so. So for the audio listeners, you might need to go check out the video for this one, but I am trying my darndest to copy his cute little heart, and it just looks like two dinosaurs awkwardly kissing. So Josh had to take it one step further and make them fuck. But, you know, it's all good fun. And
I love that we're like 1 minute into this and we're already bringing out movie references. That's good. I'm of that mind, though, that if something comes, like, if you ever like been hungry and you know specifically what you're craving for, the reason you can know that is because you've been exposed to whatever that is, right? Can you crave something you've never had? I've never done it. And I've never, anytime I ask that, people say no. When they have a craving, it's because it's something that is familiar to them. That's what they're going back to. So, you know, like you said, think about a movie. It would have to be a movie that I at least I'm aware exists, right? So is it a truly free choice? I don't know. But then the subject of free will is most interesting when it comes to, well, what do we do about it? If we're truly not in control, if we truly, you know, this was going to happen anyway, then what does criminal justice look like?
Okay, well, so
that's the next tangent. Well,
I'm going to say a lot on this. I'm going to let Josh speak first, or I'm just going to dominate this question.
Well, I just don't think it matters whether or not we have free will, because it feels like it. Regardless of the fact that I don't believe in free will, it does feel like I'm making choices. And the people that make choices to, or that feel like they've made the choice to murder somebody, we got to keep them separated from everybody else. It's like, yeah, they're definitely, it's out of their hands when you go from a universal perspective. But when you go from a human perspective, there's still a danger to everybody else. And you could say that we're destined to take them into justice and separate them from the rest of society for their safety. I don't see what the argument about free will has to do besides explain like why choices are made, but not necessarily why, what we do about those alleged choices.
It would fall into the punitive model of criminal justice, where you are given a sentence as a punishment and not necessarily a restorative one, or I forget what the other term is.
Like rehabilitation. But,
rehabilitative. Yeah, that's the one, where your punishment is not to make up for what you did, but as a just purely for a punishment for what you did. So that's where that model gets, but I don't subscribe to the punitive model anyway. So yeah. So for me, it doesn't make sense, but to a lot of people, and boy, wouldn't this be a fascinating skeptic hangout conversation where the action must necessarily lead to a consequence. You know, if you do something, something will happen to you. If you did something good will happen. If you did something bad ought to happen. And it's like short circuits in people's brains when that doesn't work out quite the way they intend for it.
Well, because now you're talking about an ought, right? So when you talk about actions, every action does have a consequence, even if it's, from our perspective, a meaningless consequence, right? So when the consequences become to the point where there's an impact that's noticeable or detrimental or positive, that's when we start talking about good or bad consequences. But truthfully, every thought, every breath has a quote-unquote consequence. It might just be too minuscule for us to really comprehend or to really examine, right? But I think going back to your question about the legal system and justice system, when you subscribe to the idea that there's no free will, punishing someone for something they did becomes almost an abuse in and of itself. Because if the person couldn't help what they did, punishing them for it, especially if you're going to talk about capital punishment and the death penalty, then now you're talking about willfully ending the life of a person who couldn't have helped no matter what their actions were. And if any other person had the same set of circumstances, same set of chemicals, same biological rhythms, they would have done the same thing in that person's shoes, right? So that means that any one of us could be serial killers if we had the right combination of chemicals in our brains or the right environmental factors or whatever. But that doesn't mean that criminal justice is a moot point, right? Because not only does punishment deter others, it teaches the other person how to behave and how not to behave. In other words, I have a behavior I can't control. Oh, I'm going to get punished for it. Oh, I need to learn how to control that behavior, right? So it is introducing an environmental stimulus, right, that promotes the change of that behavior. So I think that there's a really good place for it. But I'm with Puck that it has to be from a perspective of, what was the word that you forgot that I remembered?
Restoration and rehabilitation.
Yeah, rehabilitation. It has to be from a perspective of rehabilitation and or what Josh was saying, removing someone dangerous from society to keep them away from society. Like, a person may not have the ability to be rehabilitated. Like, there may not even be that possibility. And punishing them may seem cruel or evil, but removing them from the people that they're hurting to not do so would be even more cruel and evil, because then they get to continue to hurt more and more people. So I do think that the conversation of not having free will can very easily work into a more just justice system with the basis that we don't have free will than it does under the basis that we do.
And that could be the problem, where we have people in a very Christian-centric society that thinks that we have free will and is under the impression of a God that punishes people for doing wrongdoing. So that's why we'll go for the capital punishment. Like, they killed somebody, we got to do the exact same thing to them, despite the fact that it's shown and studies, I believe, that capital punishment doesn't deter crimes because they're still going from those factors that are out of people's hands, like mm-hmm. where they grew up, their chemical makeup. You mm-hmm. can't change that kind of thing by having, like, you're going to get killed if you do this, because that kind of circumstance doesn't even enter into people's brains most
those
of the time
when
they're
committing different.
Murder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, who was it? I think I don't remember who said it, but this is not my original thought. I just really like it. That they compared it to a faulty machine, like in a factory. If a machine, let's say a sensor doesn't work, which makes it dangerous and it could injure people, it's not the fault of the machine, but you still take that machine out of the assembly line and replace it with a machine where all the sensors are intact. Just like when Josh was saying about removing from society because it's dangerous. We're not punishing the machine. We're just looking out for the safety of everybody else on the factory floor.
Right. And then it just becomes a question of the quality of life. Where do we put that person? How do they contribute to society? Like, does society then pay for their living for the rest of their lives? Is their life dismal and almost a punishment in and of itself? Or are they able to be put into a situation where they can contribute to society? Because there's a lot that can be done while people are removed from public. Right. There's a lot that prisoners can do in terms of contributing to society. But I also think that society then would have to ask the question of, are the accommodations good enough? Are we being cruel in and of ourselves by keeping people in these prisons that have just terrible, horrible accommodations? And do we have an obligation then to that person to give them better accommodations? And I think that's a more tricky ethical question. Yeah.
And now we're doing the episode on justice systems, because what if the accommodations are actually, you know what, they're pretty darn good. They have food and shelter and healthcare and safety and whatnot. Like, I'm not saying that's what the system is now. I'm just saying if we built a system mm-hmm. that was good enough, does it maybe get to the point where some people are like, you know, if I just try to rob a bank, if I'm successful or if I'm not successful, I'm set for life either way.
Well, like, they do have somewhat similar prisons to what we were describing, I think, in Norway. At least I saw in the documentary Until the Light Takes Us, where they had a Varg Vikernes who'd killed somebody from the band Mayhem. And I saw his prison setting, and it looked like a nice apartment. Like, I joked about, like, this is nicer than where I'm living. But I still don't see people in Norway committing crimes and murder at, like, alarming rates. Because I think, for the most part, people like their freedom regardless of how good the circumstances are. So I don't think by taking people out of society and treating them well that you're going to, like, they're going to all of a sudden, let's commit crimes so we can get better living environments. Although occasionally I'm thinking that would be a fantastic thing right now, but that's mostly because of the economy out here is fucking terrible. And like, living in a nice prison sounds cushy, but if there's other factors that are always going to go into whether or not that sounds like a good thing. If you're taking care of your people and you're treating them with respect in the society and like giving them a way to live well, then there's no reason why anybody's going to feel like they need to break the system and go into jail. Just like now, the main problem I'd say with prison is it's used to take advantage of things instead of advantage of people instead of people taking advantage of the prison, because it's almost become like you've done this minuscule crime like drugs and shit like that. And then we're going to basically use you for slave labor. We're going to take away your rights when you get out of here. We're going to make sure that your life is ruined so you can't get a good job afterwards. Like, it's definitely, we're in punitive for everything right now with the prison system. And
we don't rehabilitate, much.
And I mean, we're seem to believe that this is out of people's hands. Like, this is, we're all seem to be in the determinism camp or something like determinism with this. So the fact that we're punishing them for fucking life even when they get out of prison seems fucked up.
Yeah, I think it's because of the approach that we take on exactly what you're talking about, which is free will. But I do agree with Puck that this could be a whole episode on the justice system, and so I'm gonna write that down as a suggestion on our list of
top of the 30 that I gave you earlier today,
just on top of like the bazillion that Puck sent over before the show. So people, we are good on topics for a long, long, long time. But if you listener have suggestions, we will put yours over our own. So send anyway. But I think it'd be kind of cool to move on to get back to free will. And this kind of is a good sort of segue. So Robert Sapolsky was talking about free will. And if you subscribe to the fact that we don't have it and you believe capital punishment should be a big no-no, you shouldn't kill somebody for doing something they couldn't help, and it really like just completely changes the justice system. The thing that he brings up that we have to deal with and talk about is if that murderer or that rapist or that, you know, child abuser couldn't help what they did, neither can the exceptional person or the incredibly kind person or, you know, the altruist or the one that's out saving lives every single day. So the idea that he presents is that that if we're going to say that those that are the least among us in terms of their behavior can't help themselves, those that are the greatest among us in terms of their behavior also can't help themselves. So where does that put things like achievements or people earning more money than other people or class status and stuff like that? So it's a very interesting conversation.
Or effort in general. So like talk to 20-year-old nihilist Puck, who is still somewhat convinced that nothing really matters. And along, how does that line in Fight Club go? On a long enough timeline, everybody's survival rate is zero, right? So if everything is going to happen the way it's going to happen anyway, what is the point of me putting in an effort?
Okay,
if I'm going to, so help me out, help out 20-year-old nihilist Puck here.
A lot of this, we're talking about biological imperatives, right? A lot of us have drive because we have drive, right? And you telling me like, well, you know, you have drive because you don't have free will because your chemicals are telling you that you have a drive to do something. That doesn't change the fact that I have a drive to do something. So if someone told me like, well, you have a sex drive because you have sex hormones, I'm not gonna be like, wow, suddenly I hate sex. Or you have a drive to eat delicious food because you're hungry and your stomach is signaling to your brain that it wants food. I now don't suddenly decide I don't want food anymore. Right. So knowing the biological causes of some of our imperatives doesn't necessarily mean that those imperatives go away. It just helps us to understand them. Right. So I still have an incredible drive to produce, to be creative, to contribute, to be a part of society, to build something, to be known for something. These are all things that are inherently important to me, but I can acknowledge that I didn't choose to make those things important to me. I don't value what I'm good at less just because it's a result of not just my biology, but maybe also my environment or something I was exposed to as a young kid that created that love inside me for writing or whatever the case may be, right? And people could even argue, well, an artist has put in hundreds and thousands of hours. Someone who wants to do a perfect cartwheel has just practiced the fuck out of cartwheels, right? So you can say, well, it's all that energy that you put into it, but it's still going to come from some initial drive somewhere. There's still something inside of you that's pushing you to do that, but you don't necessarily choose whether or not that imperative is there.
You could almost compare it to like privilege, like especially like where you're starting out, whether or not you have time to even put your energy into like a hobby, like writing or basketball or football or whatever. There's a little bit of privilege that comes with it where you have the time to like have fun. Some people have to work too many jobs to even like master any of their talents or stuff like that. Some people are just worrying about surviving from day to day. Some people have no innate skill. And I think with like sports, there's some innate skill that matters towards it. Like when I was in high school, and I'm going to sound like Al Bundy going back to my high school days, except for I'm going to go for a lamer sport. I was really good at track. And it wasn't like I just started out better than most of my friends, and I just stuck with it because I saw that I was better than most of my friends at running real fast because I didn't give a fuck about how my body felt. And that just having that drive is something that's a little bit innate, but I'd say that I didn't have any choice in having some innate track skill that I squandered. I just happened to have some, and then I let it grow some with practice. But I definitely would say that like there's privilege in some of your body's chemical makeup that can make you put the effort into it, be a little bit better at something faster than people. Cause I know professional athletes, they're all putting in a shitload of time into their profession. And they're all still coming at different levels. Not everybody's turning into Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant when they play basketball for hours and hours on end. Some of that's just innate skill that they brought into it with them by themselves. So there's definitely some luck involved, and that's kind of where the free will thing comes in, is like you can't control what you happen to be good at or where even your drive goes. Or you could just be like, I have no energy all the time, I have drive to do jack shit except for sleep, and people can't control that either.
I love how this one topic just touches on so many different things. We've gone everywhere from movies to sports ball, and we've gotten like five different topics out of just this one. This reminds me of the last time I was on your show, Laura.
That's how it goes, right? Because when you think about it, everything is kind of interrelated, right? But I kind of like what Josh said, but I want to take it like one step further, and I want to get Puck's thoughts on this. But we talk about innate skills, which is you don't necessarily get to choose if you're stronger naturally versus, say, weaker, or if your body is more prone to being thinner or chubbier, or if you're taller or shorter. Like, you don't really get to choose those things, but there are everyday choices like showing up to practice, like trying, working, eating a healthy diet, you know, making choices that seem to be in our control that one could potentially argue aren't. Like, and I think the biggest example that's the most poignant in our society is depression. How often people are like, you need to just get up and get off your couch and go do something, or you need to just go through the motions, fake it till you make it, right? Or you need to just go get some sunshine, right? As though that's some magic answer to curing mental illnesses such as depression.
Well, just take a walk, that cures depression. I've heard that from my aunt.
Right, right. And so you're basically telling a person, and maybe based on your advice, they do decide to go take that walk, or they do decide to get up out of bed and go do something. But the fallacy there is that just telling a person, well, here's a checklist of things to do to get undepressed, that's actually going to work. That's more in their control than it really is, right? And so everyday choices like showing up to practice, like eating a healthy diet, like breaking a diet and starting to eat unhealthy, like being depressed and not getting up and moving when you know you should. How much control do you think that you as an individual have over those choices?
Well, and then the other thing that just to tack on top of that, if we're talking about mental health, which is a very important thing to talk about, is that just because a person has the appearance of they're always on time, they're prepared for work, they seem like they're in a good mood, you know, just because they have the outward signs of not being depressed means absolutely nothing. Right. They could just be either really good at masking it, or, you know, having to really grit their teeth and get through it. So, mm-hmm. you know, like, please don't take the sign of somebody appearing to have their life all put together as any statement on like, if they come to you and say, you know what, I've been fighting depression for a number of years, don't be surprised at that. Don't be like, well,
yeah, you seem really well put together. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You seem so happy.
Because it takes many forms, and one of them is social masking, you know, where you put up a front to make it so that you don't, how was it explained to me? So I don't take up space in other people's minds worrying about me, right? Yeah. That's their motivation for being well presented in that way. But anyway, so the question about whether or not, wow, look at this, too many tangents. We went off. So Laura, you were talking about-
No, a show
about,
is
like,
not interesting if you don't go off on tangents. Yeah. So
your question was about like the connection between mental health and free will and how much really you get
just daily choices and free will, but I wanted to tie it into mental health as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. See, because most of the time when I think of free will, like I'm not big on philosophy. We've already violated two of three Puck's rules of philosophy here today. So like this philosophical discussion is going right where they usually do. And I guess for me, it's not so much like I'm fascinated about what it is, but more about the ramifications of it. It's like, okay, what do we do about the fact that we do or don't have free will? And it's like, yeah. And I think it's a spectrum. I don't think we can fully say, no, we don't have free will, or yes, we do, because clearly we're influenced by a great number of things, even things that we're not conscious of, right? Like sometime later on today, as I'm browsing through Netflix, finding something to watch, I'm going to be thinking about 24. I can't even guess why, but for some reason, I just have it in my mind to watch Jack Bauer and Nina Myers, and I can't even. So like so many of these factors just go in there. And then, you know, to say, okay, well, how much should we be personally held responsible for because of things that we don't know how it occurs to us? And that's where the fascinating questions are to me, because I don't think we have completely free will, but I also don't think that we have deterministic, but I can't quite tell you how that is influenced.
I'd say I don't believe we have free will at all. So almost like, what do we do about it? Seems like a dumb question. It wasn't a dumb question. I'm just saying that it seems like it. So it's not like I'm coming down on you, calling you an idiot.
Come down on me, do it.
But it feels like we have free will. Like everybody feels like they're making choices, and those feelings are part of why we make those choices. We feel like we want to watch TV. We feel like we want to go for a run. I can't imagine why. Even though I was on the track team, but I don't do that shit anymore. I usually feel like I want to run. I want to stay in bed on the weekends. And that's why I stay in bed. The feelings are part of this whole no control of the free will thing, because we can't control what makes us feel the way we do. So yeah, there is illusions that like you're going by what you actually want to do based on your emotions and your mind state and stuff like that. And if you go purely on that level, it definitely feels like we have free will. When I say we don't have free will, it's purely from, if I could do it over again, I don't think I can make my choices any differently. But that's only matters in like a philosophical conversation. That doesn't matter in the day to day. It's just for people that want to like hang around like coffee shops and flannel and just like pretend to be philosophical or smart about something, be an intellectual like I occasionally do. But that's it. It doesn't affect the real world. I don't think it changes how we should treat the real world, except for if the idea that you don't have free will makes you think that maybe we should treat people better, then I'm going to say, yeah, go for that, because there is no other way that that person could have done what they did. Definitely treat them better. Don't like be punitive on everything that they do. Don't encourage people to stop being lazy if they're just laying around all day and that, because I think moping around in your depression, I'm not a doctor, probably does not help make it better. I could be fucking wrong. Maybe laying in bed all day listening to The Cure is what you need to feel better about yourself. This is not Dr. Oz. I'm not going to recommend things, but I would encourage my friends to come out and hang out with me if I thought they were being depressed instead of leaving them there, because I feel that would help them, not because I know it would help them and I don't have any choice in wanting to help them because it feels like I should.
And what's interesting about what you say about that is now you're talking about outside influence, right? Like you're talking about, hey, this person's depressed and they've been on their couch and I'm going to go in and say, hey, you should get off that couch, right? So you're
don't
almost...
Don't do it like a dick. That's all I'm saying.
Don't do it like a dick. No, but what I'm saying is you're saying that there's no free will, and I agree with you on that. But then you're also backing that up by saying like sometimes what moves people is things in their external environment, right? And internal drives, I think, are very, very valid too. Like that internal drive to like, hey, I need to get up. I need to get better. I think the ultimate question is, are you in charge of that drive? Like, does a threshold have to be met before that drive clicks on? I think yes. Is it environmental? Is it biological? Is it chemical? I think it's all of them, right? I think when it comes down to any choice or any want, there's a history there that led up to that. There's a series of environmental factors that have influenced you both physically in terms of your body and your physiology, also emotionally and culturally, in terms of your understanding of things. But then there's also your set of chemicals in your body that are firing in an exact specific way that when you make that specific choice, it is the result of a history of chemical reactions and biological and environmental stimulation, right? So at what point does the choice become actually yours? It's almost like a thought experiment, right? Like if we were to say, okay, we don't have free will, nobody's responsible for their own behaviors, therefore what happens?
I think that means you need more understanding of their behaviors and why they're doing what they're doing, but you still have to take action on their behavior if it's negative and you don't reinforce it. And again, you can't really help it. I can't control whether I'm a dick or not to somebody or whether I'm nice to somebody, but everybody has the idea that they can. And if they've heard it reinforced, like I'm saying right now, don't be a dick, that could come up in somebody else's head later. Like, oh, I heard Josh say not to be a dick, so I'm not going to be a dick from now on. So that'd be outside stimulation that would help for better good. And that's all you can do. You just got to reinforce goodness, despite the fact that you don't have any choice in the matter, like really, but you feel like you have the choice. I don't think it matters whether or not we ultimately have free will. We just got to like, we see people having a hard time or being assholes or doing something horrible. We can understand where they came from. We can understand it's outside their control, but something still needs to be done about it, because you could be the outside stimulation for good instead of reinforcing the bad stimulation. And that all that also goes into what makes them do what they're doing. So like everything fucking matters with this free will argument. So putting that into the world, whether you have a choice in it or not, is ultimately what I think is the best thing for everybody.
See, it's interesting when I hear you talk about the examples that you give regarding free will, some of it sounds more like impulse control, right? Like when we're in grade school, we're all taught, it's like, yes, we get angry, but when we get angry, there are good ways and bad ways of dealing with how angry you are. I'm going to boop my camera just because it went out of focus. So you you might feel like you want to be physically aggressive, but you have to do that in a safe way where you're not hurting anybody else. You can punch a pillow, or you can run, or you can, do some other physical activity to get that feeling out. But you are taught that there are certain things that you must do or that you shouldn't do when you have this impulse. The thing is, when you teach that to a classroom of 30 kids, 29 of them seem to get it, right? And it seems like it's just a matter of teaching impulse control. And about teaching, yes, we have these biological imperatives. Yes, we have these emotional tendencies, but one must control it. So how much of free will then is learning how to control one's biological imperatives or emotional states? I never thought of that part of it. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And that's interesting, because now if you talk about the people who are a proponent of free will, right, they are the first ones that will agree, like, you need to train this behavior into people. You need to teach people how to behave. People need to be taught how to be like culturally this and do that. And these are the rules, and these are the boundaries and expectations. So the same people who are saying, well, we have free will and freedom of choice, are the ones that are like, well, you need to learn to not be so angry. You need to learn to follow God. You need to learn to be more obedient. You need to learn the system, right? And those are all behaviors that on a biological level, synapses have to like fire and be built and like be reinforced, and like it has to be repetitive so our brain can build up those neurons, right? And so without building those pathways, we don't have those behaviors. And so it is a little interesting to me that there seems to be a bit of cognitive dissonance there, that we know that behaviors are learned and that they build neural pathways the more and more and more we do them, and yet there's still so many people out there that are saying like, yeah, but we still have free will, like the ability to choose differently. But if could you choose to do something that is different from your brain pathology would be my big question, because that to me would be a phenomenal example of free will. You bring up a good point with that it's impulse control that we've been talking about so far. But what about things like likes or desires, right? I don't, like, everybody on my Facebook page knows how much I hate cilantro, right? Like, that is like my ultimate go-to example.
Are you one of those soap people that it tastes like soap to you?
Yeah. You're missing out. Yeah. Yeah. I can taste that chemical that not everybody else can, which does not make me special. It makes me annoyed when it's in my food and I don't know it.
I did not think you were special at all.
Well, people, you know, it's like, oh, I'm part of the 2%. Yeah. I'm part of the 2% that can fucking actually taste cilantro. Like, nothing special about that. No, but I don't choose to dislike it. I don't choose to like the foods I do like mint chocolate chip ice cream, right? I don't choose to enjoy that so much more than cilantro. And yet I could go in and say, when I go to the ice cream shop, I'm choosing, you know, pralines and cream or cookie dough or mint chip or whatever. But those wants that I have for those flavors of ice cream are entirely outside of my control, right?
Maybe, because I think a lot of likes and dislikes can still be from moments in your past. Like, maybe somebody close to you introduced you to a certain kind of food or something like that. Or maybe you have a good memory associated with this kind of food and it built up in your mind. Just like my taste in movies, a lot of that comes from my dad and I watching like dumb 80s action movies. If I didn't have a dad that was pushing awesome Sylvester Stallone movies on me, I might not like Sylvester Stallone. I might like watching La La Land or some garbage like that. So there are like likes and dislikes are still kind of outside of our control, but can still have like social pressure on you.
No, yeah, and so then the weird thing comes with people like me, because I look at my parents' tastes in movies and my parents' taste in music and my parents' choice of entertainment, and I do almost nothing of that. Now, I can tell you that for me, it's because it was deliberate choice. I deconstructed a lot of things from the 16 to 19 age range, where I stopped to think, do I really actually like this? Do I have a good reason for liking this? If I didn't like this, what would I like? You know, do I really need to continue listening to ABBA right now? No, I can come up with my own sense of what I think of as my music, my hobbies. Nobody in my family liked ice hockey until I came along and was like, I know ice hockey. You know, and I'm the only one in my family who likes horror movies as much as I do. So, for me, you know, we want to talk about that. It was a deliberate choice. So was I initially affected by it? Almost certainly. Could I have made a decision to alter that and say, you know what, I'm going to throw all this out, start from scratch and decide what I like for myself? I seem to have been able to, but then there's that whole thing. I seem to have been able to, but I don't know if it was truly me or if I was influenced by something else.
Right.
It could also be like rebelling against the idea of something like, you mentioned horror movies. My dad hates horror movies, but I'm still a huge fan of horror movies. And I'll go for like the grossest, most, I love Human Centipede. So like, that's nothing that my dad would ever throw on, but I find that trilogy hilarious. And that could be just, I don't think of it as rebellion because I get along well with my dad, but it could just be like, I don't want to be exactly like my dad. So I'm going to skew my taste a little bit differently than him. And you could be getting your choices from a rebellious standpoint, not necessarily from your parents, but maybe from your school. Like I had a prudish school, and anytime I wore like something a little bit horror related, I saw reactions from it, and I liked that, so I embraced that side. And that's still outside of your, like, outside of your brain. You're still getting outside stimuli on what you like that way.
I almost wonder if it's something like propensities, right? Like a brain might have a propensity to be more open to new information. A brain might be less, like, have less of a propensity to be open and more closed off, where it's, for whatever reason, unable to change your mind as easily. Like we might see it as willful or like arrogant or closed-minded, but it might also be something where you just don't have whatever that combination of physiology is to be more open-minded. I don't know, but what I think, what Puck just said, I found really fascinating. And I know that Josh said it earlier. And when he said, even if we don't have free will, the illusion is strong enough that it almost doesn't matter.
I have one quick question. I know we're getting close to closing out, but I'm just curious. We say we got to act like we have free will. Does anybody have any idea how you'd act like you don't have free will? Because that concept doesn't make sense to me.
I've thought about that. And the closest that I could come up with was more along the lines of following impulse. Right. Like if you say, OK, well, I have this impulse, therefore I'm going to act on it. That's what seems to be. I don't know. But that seems to be me exercising my free will. I have an impulse. I control it to some extent, or I choose how I act on it. So maybe when people think of what does it look like if I don't have free will, it's to ignore impulse control and to act on whatever random thing might fire in your brain that is just really, really making me want to watch 24 right now.
Or maybe just rejecting responsibility for yourself, like every single thing that you do. Well, it's not my problem, not my fault. I couldn't help it. Which is interesting because I think that the times in which people tend to do that are when their behavior is negative. And I don't think of many times when people do that when they've just created like a beautiful work of art, or when they've just done something fantastic or just saved somebody's life. Not often. I mean, I guess sometimes the humble person will, but not often will you hear people be like, well, that was just biology. It's just my chemicals, like it really wasn't me. I think a lot of times when people do say that, it's like, well, I couldn't help it, I was drunk, or I couldn't help it, we don't have free will or whatever, like it's just the way I was programmed. I think that's why it is so important to act as though we do have free will, is to put that sense of responsibility on individuals, because that sense of responsibility does change people's brain chemistry, period. Like if we empower people with a sense of responsibility, and empower people with a sense to look into themselves, to make changes, to do research, right? Then they're more likely to do that. And they're more likely to alter their own behavior for good or away from bad behaviors because we've empowered them with that thought. If you tell people you're helpless, you're going to be depressed no matter what because there's no free will and there's no hope for you, then you're not going to get people wanting to climb out of whatever predicaments they're in, right? You're going to give them that sense of hopelessness. And so I think even though I don't have free will, I do have drives. And the more those drives are encouraged and the more those drives are fed into, the positive drives anyways, right? Then the more I improve and the better a person I am. So I think it is good to still either approach it as, yeah, we still have free will and you're still responsible for yourself, or no, we don't have free will, but the decisions that we're making in the moment are the best decisions that we can make with our current biology or chemistry. And the only way we're going to make better decisions is by continuing to improve it.
both your answers were better than what I could think of. I would have thought like you just stand still and hope something will guide you along the way. But so it just seemed like a complete shutdown of like when I take my hands off the controller on a video game, and I'm just going to let Lara Croft find her way because she doesn't have free will or without free will. So your answers were better. Mine was a little bit too simplistic, I think.
No, but I do know people. I know some people, that's their dating philosophy. It's like, I'm not going to go out and try to meet people. I'm not going to try and socialize. I'm not going to do things like, you know, do the things I enjoy and therefore meet people who enjoy doing this. I'm just going to sit in my living room and do nothing but watch TV. And I'm sure if it was meant to be, then my perfect partner will just like end up in here somehow.
Right.
Makes sense to me.
It's meant to be.
Let me go order some DoorDash and let's see what happens.
Yeah. Very few people who get what they want got it because they said, well, if it's meant to be, it'll just come to me. There's some sort of action on their part, right? And I know it's time to close this out. I'm kind of surprised we didn't touch more on the religious aspect of free will, in the sense that if we don't have free will, could there be godly punishment forever and ever and ever and always? And if we do have free will, why would God do something so silly and irresponsible as to give us the free wills that he gave us and then damn us all to hell forever and ever and ever and ever? Maybe that'll be a conversation for another time.
Or the Facebook discussion group.
Or the Facebook. I think we should maybe delve into it a little bit on Facebook, because I think the fact that there are so many religious people out there in the world, I think that facet of the conversation needs to be had one way or the other. Josh doesn't think so.
I think it's just good, like, to have conversations like this that are open-ended, and maybe we'll come out, like, we've disagreed on a number of things today, and to show how to have conversations where we might disagree, sometimes maybe about very important things, but we can walk away from it with a sense of, like, trying to understand the other person, and we can shake hands and have another conversation afterwards. So this is, even if we, you know, like, this is a good model for that. That's what I try to do every time I make an appearance anywhere, is to show how to disagree and still get along.
I'm wondering how we're supposed to shake hands after this, though.
Just put your hand on the camera.
Just high five, I guess. Just like, there you go. I don't know what side you're on, so I'm just gonna.
I don't know either. I'm okay. Not technical.
All right. Well, before this devolves any further, let me just save the audience really quickly. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to check us out. All of our stuff is on Linktree/Skeptic Hangout. And we don't have Patreon yet. It's something we're working on, but we do have a merch store. So check out our merch store if you want to grab something. It will help support the show and help us to put more money towards equipment and software. And there you go. Get a beautiful mug with our mugs on it. We'll have to get some new ones up with Josh on there too. But he says no, but it's happening. But also jump on our Facebook page and let's continue the conversation there. What are your thoughts on free will? If you think we have it, what are your reasons for thinking that? What are the implications of it? If you think we don't have it, same question. Like, what are the implications? Is it even a useful conversation to be had in how we behave every day? Looking forward to hearing from you guys there. In the meantime, keep questioning.
Interrogate your beliefs.
Stay skeptical.
Bye. Thank you.